Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we're going to continue our show today dealing with the subject of life on Earth and how the life of this planet is unique in many respects, how it has a preconceived intelligent design, but at the same time works along with evolution. For those of you who may feel one way or another about either of those concepts, this is a blending of them, showing how they actually work together and how neither alone would really provide the kind of results that we have gotten in this world so far. Now, I've been doing this, I think this is number 6 today, but we've been going along and I try to bring everybody up to speed, adding new things, new ideas into the process, so that as we move ahead and I continue on telling some things in the prior shows, I'm adding additional information at the same time, and hopefully not boring anybody who has listened in before. So let me start by saying, if you want to call in, you can. And this is a show, again, about metaphysics and spirituality, as if you didn't know. And you can call in at 877-876-5227. Or if you're in Canada, try 888-815-9756. And I would love to hear anybody would like to comment on any of the ideas or thoughts that I'm suggesting, or if they have some other ideas or thoughts dealing with the general subject area. And that would be a wonderful thing. So you can do that. All right, now let me explain something. That in general, the controlling issue of life in this world and on other planets as well, it isn't just Earth, is that there is a plan of focusing in on the development of senses within life forms. And this plan progresses from just one sense in life form and the development of that sense, because of there being 7 types of energies and a type of energy is focused at a time. And in the case of the beginning of a planet, only one type of energy is focused in at a time. And then eventually more than one. And this is denoted by a thing called rounds. It just sort of is determined by the, time period that is allowed for a life form or a series of life forms to develop. And it's very important to realize that this is predetermined. It is not something that just happens mechanically. It happens because a certain kind of life form is going to start off in the development on a world. And that life form is going to have an effect on all future life forms. And as this series of, we'll call it ray energies, are focused on, and new senses are developed along different ray energy focuses, life forms become more diverse. They become more capable. They become more able to produce outcomes in terms of life within a world that allows that world to be a closer and closer representation of the creator of our universe. Yes. So we're really talking about a kind of archetypal method of producing results that eventually ends up resembling in some ways the creator or God of our universe. This is the basis of the whole system. It's like life more abundant produces a tremendously improved universe, one which contributes to the growth of its own creator. You might say, well, if you're God, why don't you just create everything for yourself and not go through all these hoops and sometimes have quirky outcomes by developing life and allowing life to create itself through many different instruments, one of them being evolution, but not entirely. And why go through that? Why not just do everything yourself because you're the creator? Well, that's the whole problem. You see, if you're the sole creator, which the being that created this universe actually is the creator of the universe, then you have a problem because at that point, everything that would be created would be nothing more than a redundancy and a kind of non-growth picture of how to make something that doesn't really represent anything new. So the process instead is to create something that is somewhat independent of its creator and allows this independence to then become newness and literally grows the creator. And you might say, but doesn't that require then limitation of the creator? And it does. If a creator has infinite abilities, which in some respects could be stated to be true if you take it to its logical outcome, then the only way that a creator really gets anywhere in this process is to limit itself, to reduce some of its abilities, to allow the capability of something much, much, much less than itself to grow on its own. And this is a great sacrifice, but it's not very different from the way that virtually all living things ultimately create new life themselves. And that's the clue for us to see how this picture works. It's very interesting. Okay, so I thought I'd throw that in to add to everything else that I've said before. And now, moving ahead to where we should be, at least in this show, we've talked about how life has developed itself through millions and millions of years, actually billions of years, and has reached the point where human beings are being developed in this world. In the last show, I took us up to the point where human beings were in dense form and were capable of, recreating themselves through normal sexual procreation processes. And this is a key element to realizing that human beings originally actually didn't come from the normal evolutionary development. They came through the form development or physical form development of their body or bodies that are physical, but they developed themselves in terms of other centers and other bodies through a process that is quite different. It is more along the lines of a soul spiritual type of development in which the consciousness of a human being was actually developed independent to some extent of the animal-like forms that this consciousness had to eventually find a way of inhabiting to some extent, and then through that become a fully functional human being that can then procreate through sexual means. So interestingly, we could say that the very, very first human beings were not produced through sexual procreation, but through the combination of mental, astral, and etheric energies joining with other etheric energies and physical energies of an animal. Now, that animal, that archetypical animal, is yet to have been found. It may never be found because of this unusual event, which is non-evolutionary and has a spiritual basis. And because of that, it confounds evolutionary biologists today. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all works its way out. There is no true missing link, because part of it is happened in other dimensions before it all came together. And it happened, and when it did come together, it happened so suddenly that if we could ever find the exact archetype of this being, it wouldn't disclose much to us, because there would be no developmental history to it. In other words, it just happened one day. And that would confuse even further, I'm afraid, our friends, the evolutionists, because they would not be able to say, well, look, we had billions of years, and this is how it all came about. Those billions of years that were saved is exactly the reason it was done the way it was done. It saved about, give or take, somewhere between 5 and 10 million years to do this faster route. We could have actually evolved the human being, but the time factor was a critical element, and every bit of time that could be saved was used in creating humans on Earth. Now, what's so different about humans compared to the mammals, which I talked about last week? And that is that mammals may have up to 7 centers in their bodies, but those centers have 2 components to them. One is the processing of energy, and the other is the consciousness of the being, the animal, being connected to the sense so that the animal can use the sense on their own without getting an instinct, which is a preconceived thought, from a soul, a group soul, which doesn't even exist in this realm. And for human beings, this would never work because it tremendously limits the creativity of animals when they use instincts. They virtually are all the same. You know, it's like watching the wildebeest running through Africa today. And one is pretty much the same as another. There's very little difference in the way that they function because they mostly function along instinct. And they're a pretty advanced animal. They're not a low animal. So even if you get to the more advanced animals, instinct still is a dominant factor. And this limits creativity, and it prevents something else from happening. And that is that out of the 7 potential centers an animal has, only a maximum of 5, and a specific ones at that, have any consciousness associated with them. In other words, the being can't self-reflect on what the sense is that is giving them information about their environment, which is a critical element. And they can't do this, especially using the 2 senses that humans can. And these 2 senses are called the crown and heart centers or chakras. And these 2 centers process 1st and 2nd type of these energies. They're sometimes called ray energies that develop them and that lead to the ability to, when joined together especially, develop a full sense of consciousness about the information they provide. But the most important thing is the information itself is about their own creator. And animals cannot reflect on the existence of or any way to create more of their own creator because they don't have consciousness of any of the information that comes into them about that subject. Humans, to the contrary, can exactly do that very thing. Humans in general have the ability to have a sense of their creator and to be able to be conscious of it. This makes them totally different from any other or any animal, because I really wouldn't call them animals because they fall outside of that kingdom by this very trait. And it allows them to be creative in amazing ways as well because they have these 2 extra senses, plus they don't have preconceived thought controlling them. They have a few drives, but no instincts. The difference is that a drive is like a singular aspect to one's behavior, like drinking water or eating food, but it doesn't tell you specifically a unique way of drinking water or a unique way of finding or cultivating food or whatever, because an instinct is a complex pattern of behaviors, whereas a drive is just a single force within us to do something. It's more or less controlled in many ways by genetics. So interestingly, animals have some drives, but they have huge amounts of instincts, and humans have no instincts. We just have a few drives. And we have to be extremely creative in comparison to the way that animals function, because we have to think for ourselves rather than having a soul that is called a group soul, because that soul may give the same instincts to thousands or even millions of animals, but we only have one soul that doesn't give us much thought about anything until we think of it, to some extent, ourselves. Wow, that's a big difference. You can see how, though, the 2 of those concepts really are change everything. It's a true game changer. And it's so wonderful because it excites me to talk about this because it gives us a uniquely different view of our own existence and the world around us. I hope this is getting through because this is the fun part about talking about this. This is the fun part about hearing about it because it really distinguishes us from all other life on our planet. And it has a lot to do with today's show. We, human beings, are kind of like the real focus of where life is trying to go to. In order for life to be able to co-create with its creator, create a significant amount more to its creator, it has to have, at a minimum, the human level of consciousness. And that comes from what I described a few minutes ago. So if we can't get to that point on a planet, the planet is kind of like a waste. Now you might say, well, what happens when you get human beings, as we have on Earth, and human beings, half the time or more, act more like animals, and they don't necessarily think in ways that resemble their creator, and they don't try to co-create, and they may ignore the messages that there is a creator. Well, then the problem is that those human beings, in resembling animals more than they look like human beings, oftentimes lead the planet into crisis, and the crises sometimes leads the planet into failure. Since it is humans that are the critical element towards getting the planet to finally significantly develop more of its creator, which is the major part of why we're here, the major part of the whole system. And so this is a problem we're experiencing on this planet in extreme. And there are reasons for that, and I'll certainly address those in today's show. Interestingly, human beings have to exist even though they may threaten and even destroy a world, because everything below the human level only leads the planet into a virtual, we'll call it, dead end. If you were to allow evolution to continue, and if you were to even make everything as copacetic as possible in terms of the environment, the results would still be that no creature below a human could ever create more of its own creator to any significant level. And the planet itself eventually would die, and that has to do with evolutionary theory in a strange way, that the competition between animals, due to evolutionary processes, leads to a limitation on life instead of a diversity of life, and to the eventual reduction of life on a planet. So it doesn't mean that evolution continues endlessly and life continues to grow and grow and grow. Just the opposite. It gets into a bottleneck. Now, these theories in evolution have, when tested using computer models and other ways, have shown that this is a consistent problem. And the way around the problem is to have humans to come in. I know a lot of people may disagree with me about this. And to fiddle with the system. And to change what is a normally natural selective, you know, a dominance through superiority of ability to adapt, etc., system to a system of spiritual growth in themselves and eventually taking over the lower kingdoms through their own civilization, they become the masters of the planet and eventually through that process become masters of themselves and connected to their creator through their own co-creations. It takes a long time for this to happen. In next week's show, we'll talk about that, and how long it takes, and what is the process for that to happen. But in today's show, I want to at least bring out that it's critical that human beings actually exist, although we certainly, in the beginning and even the middle part of our development on a planet such as Earth, we mess things up pretty badly. But that chance has to be taken and has to be given. so that the planet can advance. You can't just take humans out of the equation, because eventually everything will destroy itself. And you can't just force humans to behave in a certain way, because that would lead, again, to a lack of freedom in thought and behavior, which then we can't be creating on our own, and we'd just be a puppet show for our own God. And that God doesn't want that, and I don't think we would either. So it's a real, real interesting concept that we are the critical element, human beings are the critical element to the development of a world at a certain point. In this round, which is called the fourth round, where four energies are focused on four different chakras at the same time out of seven, at any particular moment of life development on the planet, during this time, it is the most critical, the most dangerous, and the most interesting, because we now are starting to be co-creators, if we choose. And we also can be destroyers, more than any other life form has ever been, in the outcome of what's going to be the life of this world. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. The four different rays at a time are critical in the equation. You might say, well, why didn't it happen during the dinosaurs then or something? Well, because, first of all, dinosaurs never had the capability of understanding their own creator, and only three of the rays were focused on the planet then. You got to have four, because four puts you over the middle. It puts you past the middle would be 3.5 out of seven. Four is just over that. And you got to have a majority of the centers focused on at a time in order for life forms to start being able to get closer to their own creator. Plus, you got to have that special thing that makes us human, that the two highest centers, the heart and crown chakras, are going to be developed in full consciousness, or as close to full consciousness as possible, eventually within human beings. And this allows us to be fully conscious of our own creator as we do whatever we do. This is a very, very important element. And that these two have to be put together, the four rays and the consciousness of humans, to reach the point where we are today. If you were to eliminate either one of them, human beings would fail, and it would be impossible actually to develop what we call a human being. So this is all, and the reason I'm including this right now is so that you realize that this is not happening just because of evolution. You can let evolution do whatever you want, but if you don't introduce these ray focuses that are really coming from outside sources, not coming from our planet per se, if you don't introduce this, you don't get to where we are. You can run as many evolutionary models as you want. It won't work, because we are something that is significantly different. Okay, we have a caller online. Hello, who is this?
Oh, hello, Niall. This is Micron.
Oh, hi. Nice to hear from you.
It's very nice to hear from you as well. And I appreciate all that you're speaking about tonight. But I had a certain question that ties into what you're saying about the animals and the humans coming in to sometimes shake up the system.
Yes.
And this is like a little bit of a tough spot, but is it the reason why there's certain things going on in the world that have to do with, you know, even Dr. Fred Wolf, you know, he was on your show a long time ago. And
sure,
he did
the
things,
physicist.
And he did many things, but he thought time travel was possible and things like that. But my question is going to point toward cloning. And when you say those two chakras aren't in animals, is the reason why they can't clone things bigger than a cat or a dog, and why they'll never really get to a human? All of a sudden now the trend is moving away from, you don't hear from them at all now. Is it because those two chakras can never be duplicated?
No. Actually, the interesting thing about that is this. I think if you look at Lights and Meaning, I mentioned this, but it is possible to clone a human being. We should not just because I don't think it's a good idea to do so for other reasons.
Right, but science
consider
hasn't
that,
even
that
gotten
it is
near
impossible.
There.
What's that?
The science has just shut down talking about it completely.
Well, because there's a taboo to some extent against it. The real problem with cloning has to do with diversity. Part of the picture of God's creation within us is to increase the level of diversity of life, which improves the ability for there to be freedom of choice and freedom of thought, etc. And without diversity, you reduce creation. And creation is a major reason we're doing this. So cloning has an effect on stifling creation. And it can be done, but its outcome has undesirable effects. And we may have to go through a period where we experiment with it and maybe do it, because we will be able to at some point. I don't know that it's possible at this moment technologically, but eventually we will. But I think we'll eventually find that it isn't desirable. And that's because we will see it in the big picture. The big picture is, okay, so we can clone human beings, but where does that land us? It lands us with a lower diversity in the human gene pool. It causes some types of artifacts and problems to become replicated instead of extinguished. And it produces an effect that will make us less creative as a total race on a planet. And so that's not a good thing. But we may have to discover that as we discover more about the things I'm talking about this evening. And so that's why cloning is undesirable. Now, I think that it's undesirable from some people's standpoint because at a more, we'll say, astral or emotional level, people feel, and this is not incorrect necessarily, that it is against God because there is something in the system that they can't articulate as well maybe as I have. I'm not trying to be show off here or anything, but I think they may not have be able to quite articulate it in a mental fashion, but they can feel it, that it just doesn't seem right. If there's a creator of everything, which some people believe, then this creator would say, well, okay, normally I think it's a good idea for things to naturally create and create diversity through the procreation route that I created, but if you want to subvert that and go this other direction, go ahead and it's fine. I think that we have the choice to go in the other direction to find out that it isn't so fine. And that reveals to us more of what our creator is like. We start becoming more like our creator when we choose not to do some things that ultimately are destructive, but we may have to try them in the first place to see that.
There's the dynamics of all these cosmic forces that you're saying, but it almost seems like the third cosmic ray is even putting a stifling on that type of science, almost in America.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to understand the third cosmic ray is big trouble right now. I mean, it affects large systems of economics and banking, so we got that going on. I wrote some interesting articles and did some lecturing on this back in the early 90s, 92 to be exact. Unfortunately, I predicted what was happening, what is happening right now, almost to the day and, well, to the month and year, because it was easy to predict to some extent, just based upon the change in the rates. But unfortunately, we don't have to go this way. We can really become a bit more virtuous in our use of our throat chakra, which is the chakra that's controlling this behavior, and to improve our levels of communication with others, to decrease this ability to be greedy and to gain more physicalness than others, which is part of this present system of thought. And to maybe modify the capitalistic side of things so that we are all working together for a common benefit rather than trying to beat somebody else out. I'm not suggesting that we go to socialism or communism. I'm just saying that we become more aware of the nature of givingness in ourselves and participate within that. So maybe we're moving in that direction. I don't know. I think, though, that we're experiencing.
I think that's happening to people automatically, whether they like it or not, to some degree, and you're saying it's good to even be conscious about it.
Yeah, it's happening whether people like it or not. The only thing is that the pain and the problems that we're suffering through may intensify, especially until the middle of the cycle, which is the fall of 2012, and then sometime after that. So I'm hoping that we can wise up and maybe I'll make some better choices before we get to that point, because the things we're experiencing today may seem relatively mild. And last year, I said this to a number of people, last year is going to be the good old days. The 2007, I was saying this throughout 2007, that will be the year we said were the good old days, and from that point forward, it was really going to get nasty, and here we are. But at any rate, the third ray going out, changing, always is the most tumultuous ray to have that happen in, and worse than that, it's also it's in vibration with the whole world, because we have a planet that focuses along that ray. We're developing life that's dominated by that ray. So it's a difficult thing. It's where planets tend to really fall apart the most, because the third ray tends to be the most volatile.
And just to briefly just ask you another question. I'm so sorry about this. I don't want to take up
okay.
much time. But this whole thing about the third ray, as you're saying, but could you just could you put this in a subtle direction for me to understand why there's things on the planet like the collider that just got introduced in London or whatever? And why do those things tend to seem to pop up versus other things? It's like we're going toward a phase that's more physics-oriented, where they're studying the Big Bang, and then they don't know really what happened to the Big Bang, but now they're saying, what we really don't know is seconds after the Big Bang, and why are things even like falling apart because of that battle between matter and antimatter, you know, and stuff like
that. Well, you know, now you're talking about the first second. We're trying to understand, you know, in Switzerland, they're opening the Big Hadron, collider. But the point is that ultimately, we are on a search for our creator. We don't understand this. Scientists are very conflicted. Science is very conflicted because it wants to understand its creator because it has these two senses in every scientist, yet at the same time it denies the existence of its creator and looks for the answers only in energy. And energy is a third of the creator, but it's the other two parts, which has to do with consciousness, has to do with creation itself and the ability to unify the universe. Those parts are missing, so it's like being almost completely senseless and looking for an answer to how the universe is.
Because you were saying
created.
In previous shows how, like 95% of the universe is missing. They don't even know where. They only know like 4 or 5% of it, or whatever. And that is true. But now they're even talking about they don't even know what holds matter together. They think it should be disintegrated because of the balance between the two.
I think that the new collider coming online will help them to understand some things about energy, but become even more confused about extra dimensions of time and space. And when they can't fully understand the Higgs boson particle that they won't find, and they have a force that they can't find a particle to, and that's a real big issue. But when all of that doesn't work out together the way it should, that's going to be a critical point, because building a bigger collider isn't going to solve the problem. And so I think at that point, some people might pick up a book I wrote or some other people have written that suggests that maybe these other dimensions of time and space have to be included, and it's very likely that we have to start considering that there really is such a thing as a creative thought, and that thought ultimately is part of the equation. The interesting thing is that if we go back to the 1920s, thought was part of the equation, and by 1931 or two, it was out of the equation. It's kind of like science had two different avenues it could take, and it took the physical energy one more than it did including thought. But we'll go back to it, because there's going to be no alternative but to do that. And the change in the rays will help that, because right now the third ray keeps dominating, pushing us more towards an energy focus, and as the third ray weakens, which it will do after 2012, we'll be looking more inwardly with the fourth ray replacing it, And there will be a change in focus, and I think people will start accepting some of the older theories of the Gestaltists, the people who are into the original concepts in quantum physics, and get away from the mechanical side.
I would totally love for you to do a show about just about that one thing.
About that one thing? Well, okay, maybe. I'll tell you what, maybe I'll do that within the next few weeks after we finish this life series. But for right now, I've got to go to a break. I want to thank you for calling in. I hope you read that last email I sent you, too.
Yes, I appreciate all your input. Thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. All right, so we've gone a little bit past our break here, so we're going to take a break for a couple of minutes, about 2.5 minutes, and we will be back, and I'll continue tonight's show.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Okay, we're back. This is Why Life Is again, and I hope that my discussion there with Micron did not confuse anybody, but if it did, we'll talk more about those subjects in another time. Let me continue on now with our journey into how the life of our planet is developed. So human beings become the really focus of a planet's development, particularly as you get past what is known as the, we'll call it the tipping point, that isn't exactly what it's called, but of the fourth round, where mammals are no longer the dominant life form, and human beings are. At that particular point, human beings take control over the kingdom, starting with the mineral kingdom first. And they gradually dominate this kingdom and kind of determine its outcome. We have done that, and we've gone past that point. And eventually they dominate the plants and then the animals. And, of course, they dominate themselves. And during this process, which is called civilization, they extend their own senses through these lower kingdoms, using the kingdoms to become much more powerful beings and to find their creator in the process. It's inherent within us to search for our creator. Even if we delude ourselves into believing that creator is a bunch of atoms or a bunch of particles in an accelerator or whatever, we really are looking for our creator. It's just continuously happening. It may take the shape of something other than a religion, but in many ways, it resembles a religion, even if it isn't stated that way. So scientists have their religion right now. A lot of it deals with energy. And besides scientists, there's artists who have a way of doing it through expression and imagination and beauty and maybe ugliness, too. And then there are just every profession, every type of way that human beings express themselves. There is a kind of religion in trying to find God. But it's hidden. It's hidden in some cases. In other cases, it's not. It's an interesting thought for all of you out there to look for this and to see if you can see it in yourselves and others, because it's all around. It really is. And it's not subtle. But strangely, because of our illusion in this dimension of time and space, it also isn't obvious at this time to many people. It's so odd that so many people seem to think that there couldn't be a God or there isn't a God because of various illusions they have. And the results are startling because oftentimes they're striking out in a, we'll call it, atheistic fashion, leads them into a religiosity about their position and reflects the concepts of being a co-creator with the creator, even as they try to deny and even prove the non-existence. It's a quite interesting process. I can think of some people that do this in various professions, and it's almost humorous if you can stand back and watch it take place, because these people do have this great illusion that they are, unfortunately, at this time, not aware of. Now, human beings go through a process in which there are races. You can call them, we'll call them like sub-ray functionings that develop elements of the senses, and particularly their sense of their creator, expressed through their civilization that is unique to the race itself and even to a sub-part of the race. This is not about one race being different or better than another race. It's about the development of the awareness and then eventually consciousness of God through an expression of these, we'll call them races, that develop over time. And there are major races, and they go through millions to thousands of years of development. And then there are sub-races that may last thousands to even less than that of years as time goes by. Because the developmental aspects of creating a human being, and any animal actually, is accelerated as more time is given to the focus of these ray energies on developing our senses. As something becomes better at sensing, it accelerates its own way of living. And that's particularly true of humans, and particularly true of humans in terms of finding their creator. So a human being from, we'll say, 100,000 years ago, their concept of their creator changes considerably from then to today, because they have had more time to develop themselves. And also their awareness has improved significantly, and therefore their consciousness. So while I know a lot of people think that someone from, say, 5,000 years ago would be almost identical to a person living today, that's not true. human beings have changed significantly in their consciousness, and the way that they are able to use the knowledge that they acquire through their senses, and even the knowledge itself, has improved significantly. But they can put this knowledge together and see many more holes, greater, when I say holes, I'm talking about greater confluences of information put together, so they discover their creator in more and more significant and larger ways. We're doing that right now. But unfortunately, we're not at the point in our particular race, which is the fifth major race, and we're in the fifth minor or sub-race of that fifth major race, that we can, at the present time, the majority of the time, see or understand in consciousness the majority of our co-creation with our Creator. Unfortunately, that won't happen until the next major race actually is developed. So we are in a process that, and we're kind of, this process is understood. It's known before a planet is even created that this is, these sort of problems are going to happen. We're in a process in which, while we're physically alive, we are more an illusion than not, on an average, and we're unable to see our co-creator most of the time. As a matter of fact, most of the time, we are more an illusion than we are not an illusion. And until the majority of us in this world are a member of the next major race, which is the sixth race, we're in the fifth race right now, it's going to be true that we are more an illusion than that. When we're in illusion, while we're physically alive, this is true, we tend to be combative and destructive to each other and sometimes to life on the planet. We tend to create structures through our civilization that do extend our senses, but in ways that does not produce virtuous outcomes, produces sometimes very dangerous, destructive outcomes. And so this is where we find ourselves at the present time. And it's not going to get a lot better for hundreds of years. The next major race actually isn't due to come about for 1 to 2,000 years. So we've got two more minor races to develop, and the sixth sub-race and the seventh sub-race of the fifth. And those will be considerably better. In the next few hundred years, human beings will develop a consciousness that does include trying to overcome the illusions of this world. And maybe within 1,000 years, most human beings will actually be right on the border of doing that more than not within their lifetime while they're physically alive. Now, you notice I keep saying while we're physically alive, because once we die from the physical world and go to the astral, our consciousness raises, and we start living like we might in our next race, at least the next sub-race, and oftentimes the next race, depending upon the level of consciousness we develop while we are physically alive. So it's amazing how we can suddenly live more like what we're going to be like 1,000 years from now in other dimensions of time and space. That's because the complexity of the dimensionality of our senses and the space and time that we're in allows us to expose to ourselves, give ourselves much greater awareness of our own creator. It's a more spiritual place to live, and we can live there in greater sense. But here, we're so limited in our senses because the energies are so dense and gravity has such a severe effect on them, and there's only really, technically, we call it three dimensions, but there's really one dimension here. We're in a position where it's almost impossible to use our senses effectively so that we can live more spiritually, and we live more materially instead. And that's what I'm saying when I talk about living in illusion, is that we, instead of balancing our material existence with the spiritual, we do the opposite. We tend to gravitate towards a material sense of life, thinking that most of our existence is about physical things, gaining them, having them, defending them, taking them from others or whatever, and not recognizing that this other side of existence is equally, if not more, important, and we lose scope, we lose focus of that. Now you might say, well, what about the people who are very religious? Aren't they doing that? Not really, because unfortunately religion also has a very material side to it, and some religions are as material as any other part of civilization. So it doesn't mean that just because someone is religious, they necessarily are spiritual. Being spiritual would mean that they think in terms of their creator, and they try to emulate that in terms of their behaviors. That's not necessarily the way most people function, even though they may be quite religious, but it's a totally different way. Now, some people are religious and spiritual, and that's a wonderful thing, but those are the rare ones compared to the most others. So religion is not some kind of bastion of great spirituality. As a matter of fact, it may be no better than any of the other means that we have for discovering our relationship with our Creator. So here we are, we're in the midst of this problem that we aren't aware enough as a developmental race to create a civilization that expresses our Creator within it to the extent where it's the majority of the time. To the minority, sometimes it happens, but to the majority, no. But on an individual level, any human being can advance themselves beyond the level of the race that they're in. And this is critical to understand, that each of us has the choice and ability to move ahead from where the average is of the race that is being developed. And that means we don't any longer just respond to the rays that are being focused on our planet, but instead we respond to an inner ability to create ourselves into our Creator, rather than relying upon the focus of energies coming from outer space and other planets and star systems, etc., that are meant to help the average people. But we can go beyond that. We can change ourselves and almost ignore the effects of the race on ourselves. We can choose to spiritually change ourselves through a thing called spiritual discipline, and make ourselves into something that is considerably different from what is the average for the race of people that are around us. And some people do choose to do this. When they do, they sometimes know they're doing it, and in the beginning, most people don't know they're doing it. This is the surprising element. They don't know, because of the illusion being so great, in the beginning, most people don't know exactly what it is they're doing. They're just kind of egged on by something inside of them. Really, it has to do with soul contact and being able to make the choice sometimes to sacrifice some material issues in life for the spiritual, and wanting to be something more than what they see around them and in themselves as being the average. They want to be something greater. They don't know necessarily what that is, but they are driven. And in those drives, they may do somewhat blindly the correct things to change themselves. And eventually the changes add up, and eventually they do it fully consciously. But that takes some time. It may take lifetimes, because we come back quite a few times. And in each time we have a somewhat different personality, but we have the same soul, and the soul is the part that has developed itself into this spiritual element, so it stays with us, and the personality is the part that was the material side, and it tends to just disappear. So most of us don't have much of our old personalities, but we do have the soul part of ourselves, which has remained the same. That soul part can be manifested while we're physically alive, even though our soul does not exist in this dimension. It exists two dimensions higher, in the higher monastic dimension, where, for most people, that it's like some other completely different universe, but it's not. It's still part of this universe, but it's something really very different. So it's really interesting that we choose to come back here. We choose to come and develop more of our Creator in these lower dimensions of time and space, where our soul cannot exist. It has to take on bodies and senses and become illusion and become a human being in order to create in these lower dimensions of time and space. And that's what we're doing. And when we do it, we don't always know exactly what it is we are doing, because the illusions are so great. It's something to consider. And we're out of time for right now. So let me just say that if you have a chance, on this Sunday, October 12th, you can listen in to the Afterlife Part 8 on WDISAM.com radio. Not, it is radio, but it's over the Internet. If you are not living in the Boston, Norfolk, Providence, Rhode Island area, and you can do that from 4 to 5 Eastern Daylight Time. If you are in the eastern part of the United States, the northeastern part, you can listen to me on 1170 AM radio. And also, on October 20th, Mimi's going to be talking about the chakras over at Mesa Fiesta from 7 p.m. to 8:15 p.m. at Borders. Okay, so we are out of time for right now, and I want to thank you for listening in. And next week, we're going to go into the future. I'm going to try to cover in one show what it's like, what our future could be like, assuming we make it through maybe the next century or so. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.